This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about medical mistakes. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. In 2008, David Ring was an experienced hand surgeon. He was the chair of the Quality and Safety Committee for the Orthopedic Department at Massachusetts General, one of the best hospitals in the country. And it wasn't going to be a very busy day for him.
This day I had six surgeries scheduled, which for a hand surgeon is not a lot because we do small surgeries.
The first three surgeries require general anesthesia for the patient. They all went well. Then David turned to a carpal tunnel surgery, which is done under local anesthesia.
And that patient I knew was very nervous about the shot for the local anesthetic.
David talked to the patient and tried to reassure her that it would all be okay. Soon, she seemed calm. Once she was prepped for surgery, he got started. When they were all done, David pulled aside the drape to tell the patient it went well.
What I saw was a traumatized person, like just really distraught.
He realized his efforts to calm her down had not worked after all. She looked absolutely terrified.
And it was heart-wrenching, and I took a moment to apologize and connect with her and soothe her. But it really affected me. Her anxiety, her terrible experience affected me.
David felt shaken, upset about this patient's experience, and he could feel the adrenaline rushing through his body. But he wanted to keep going, to refocus. So when it came time for his final surgery of the day, he was determined to do a great job.
I'm going to do the best carpal tunnel release I've ever done, thinking about the person that had the worst experience.
The surgery went well. David left feeling better. Back at his office, he started looking over patient paperwork. And that's when it hit him.
And I realized that I've done a carpal tunnel release when I should have done a trigger finger release.
He had performed the wrong surgery on his last patient.
It's hard to put into words how bad this feels. There's a split second where the mind can imagine that it didn't happen. You know, and then you just quickly beyond that, it's like it happened. It's like there's no air. It's like the floor just drops.
What happened next was highly unusual. Liz Tung takes it from here.
The first thing David did after he realized his mistake was to call the OR and tell them what had happened. Then he went to do the hardest part, apologize to the patient, who we'll call Alma, to protect her privacy.
You know, she was in a chair sitting up, so I got down to her level, which meant I was on my knee, and I said, you know, I made a mistake.
David started to cry, and Alma sat quietly. She was a stoic 65-year-old woman from the Caribbean who spoke only Spanish, a language David luckily was able to speak.
She was a woman of very few words, so she's just listening as I speak. And I said, if you want me to, I can take care of the trigger finger for you. And she said, yes.
David remembers this somber silence that settled over the unit as they again prepared for surgery. As he was walking down the hall, he spotted the director of the OR approaching him. The director pulled David into a room so they could talk.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm in for it now. He's going to punish me. He's going to yell at me. He's going to, you know, I won't be able to operate for a while. And what he said actually was, how are you doing? And this is the part where I tear up, because at the moment that I was being the hardest on myself that I've ever been, or one of the hardest, he just cared about me.
After their talk, David pulled himself together and performed the trigger finger release. Then he discharged the patient and went home.
And that was a, needless to say, very sleepless night.
There ended up being no lasting damage for Alma, physically anyway. Her trigger finger was fixed, and the tendon David had cut during the carpal tunnel release would heal on its own. But for David, and likely Alma, the ordeal imprinted a lasting trauma. The days and weeks after were filled with soul-searching for David and the hospital. He had meetings with his colleagues, along with the Quality and Safety Committee, to review what had happened, why it had happened, and how it could be avoided in the future. It's the kind of mistake a lot of hospitals would be eager to bury as quickly as possible. But the administrators at David's hospital did the opposite. They proposed that he present the case at an upcoming conference.
Now remember, I'm already a quality and safety advocate and champion of my hospital, so it was an easy yes. But it was also an easy yes because the thing that I dreaded most is walking down the hall past a colleague and they know what the event that I've been through and not being sure whether we can talk about it or not. So I really wanted to get up and talk about it. And I wanted to make something good out of it. I wanted to do the best I could with something that was awful, talking about it, being open about it.
And so David dove headfirst into a fact-finding mission to identify every factor that had contributed to his mistake, like a post-mortem after a death. In hindsight, David realized that the path towards his mistake started before he even got to the hospital. That morning, as he laid out his day, he thought about the 6 surgeries he had scheduled, 3 medium-sized ones and 3 smaller ones. Only 2 of the smaller ones were carpal tunnel releases. But without realizing it, his brain created a mental shortcut, 3 bigger surgeries and 3 carpal tunnels. It's a mistake he might easily have corrected if his day hadn't veered into chaos. The 3 bigger surgeries went fine, but things started going wrong with his first carpal tunnel surgery, the patient with the intense fear of local anesthesia. David knew about her anxiety and had talked her through everything several times. She seemed calm and ready. It wasn't until after the procedure that he saw the trauma on her face.
It was bad because it was like a violation of a trusting relationship.
And that feeling of guilt, regret, and pain followed David throughout the day, not only as a mental distraction, but a physical one, too.
All the adrenaline goes and the anxiety goes and it just changes your mind and it changes your physiology.
So that was one big factor. Another was the chaos happening around David as he moved on to operate on Alma. For one thing, there was no interpreter available to translate for Alma. And so David, the only Spanish speaker around, was called in to walk her through the pre-operative prep. Later, because other surgeons were running behind, the operating room for Alma's surgery had to be changed at the last minute, which ended up causing 2 chain reactions. First, it meant a changeover in staff. Specifically, the nurse who prepped Alma before surgery and performed the safety check would no longer be present. Second, the room change created a delay. During this brief pause, while he was walking through the recovery unit, a nurse grabbed David. The patient with a fear of anesthesia, she told him, was decompensating.
Her anxiety and her bad feelings were, emotions were really spiraling.
David found her in a state, crying and hyperventilating.
Agitated, physically moving around, and almost unreachable, like it's hard to have a conversation with her.
He sat with her a while to try and calm her down.
I think it was helpful, but again, her emotions transferred to me. There's that emotion contagion or stress contagion.
David was thrust back into the same awful state he'd been in right after her surgery. And so on his way to Alma's procedure, his last of the day, he made that fateful resolution in his mind. I'm going to do the best carpal tunnel release I've ever performed. But from the beginning, the hiccups continued. When Alma's arm and hand were washed, it wiped off the site marking. The X marks the spot used to ensure surgeons are operating in the right place. Most importantly, David says, the team never performed a timeout, a pre-surgery huddle, where they review who the patient is, what procedure they're about to do, where exactly it's being done, and any concerns they might have beforehand. It's a protocol recommended by the World Health Organization that David's hospital was 1 month away from officially adopting. David usually did his own version of a timeout anyway, but this time he was frazzled and upset. The room was in chaos, and as he later discovered, his nurse had assumed that his chit-chat with the patient in Spanish had been him confirming the procedure details. And then there was the cherry on top of the confusion sundae, a shift change right in the middle of the surgery. The second time that day that Alma's team had been switched out for a new one. In the final scheme of things, David realizes that all of it, the mental shortcut that made him think he was performing three carpal tunnels that day, the emotional turmoil from his earlier patient, the last-minute room and staffing changes, the language barrier that sowed confusion, all of it had contributed to David performing the wrong surgery. And so once he'd pieced everything together, David presented the case before a conference of his peers. Later, he published his account in the New England Journal of Medicine, and soon found that he was being asked to speak about it everywhere.
I would essentially just tell my story, as I'm doing today. And then I'd go to the back of the room, and people would swarm around me. And they all wanted to tell their story. And a part of their story was often, I was punished, I was shamed.
There is a famous report on medical errors that was published in 1999 called To Err is Human. And David says that's a sentiment that people in medicine seem to understand, that mistakes happen. And that's why it's important to have what he calls a good safety culture, multiple duplicated safety nets, so that when one fails, another one catches the mistake.
Everyone who's trained in quality and safety learns early on about James Reason's Swiss cheese theory. And the idea is that each safety system is a piece of Swiss cheese. It's not perfect. It's got holes in it. But you line up safety system upon safety system, and the only way an error leads to harm is if it goes through each of those safety systems, if the holes in the Swiss cheese line up. And this there couldn't be a more perfect example of that. My mind was stuck on carpal tunnel. I'm going to do the best carpal tunnel release I've ever done. The anxiety I was feeling because the patient had a bad experience. And that's the error. And then the error making it through all the layers of Swiss cheese because of everything I mentioned. There's so many things that could have kept my error from causing harm.
And safety culture isn't just about having the right protocols in place. It's about health workers feeling safe themselves about reporting their mistakes. Safe from punishment, safe from shaming, safe from being fired.
That story was reported by Liz Tong.